the day of our accident, Jant and I took the kids to go see a Muppet movie, and we're going from there out to our church camp. And on the way to our church camp, the accident happened. Other than that, I can't tell you any more about that day. I don't remember recalling you that.
In July 1999, on a county road near Elkhart, Indiana, two cars were drag racing. Coming over the crest of a hill at 92 miles an hour, one of the cars slammed head-on into a van carrying Jim and Janet Slate and their four children.
I vaguely remember Jim swerving and kind of saying something in a panic and looking up, but I don't remember the trip in between, you know, how we get from one place to the other. I'd say probably the next memory was actually waking up at the scene of the accident and waking up because Haley was crying and asking what happened.
When we arrived, I was the first ambulance on scene, and it literally looked like a war zone. The accident came out as not only a motor vehicle collision, but there was also fire involved, and there were multiple patients involved as well. So it was kind of a huge mass casualty situation rolled up into one. And I don't think anybody that was arriving on that scene was fully prepared for what we found.
But then the car that had hit us bursted into flames. And I remember just praying, because at that time Haley wasn't talking anymore. When I could see her, you could see the blood coming down her face. So I knew she had been hurt, but I didn't know how bad or what had happened. And Jim was in shock and unconscious and trapped under the steering wheel. So I knew that it had been bad. And I just remember when Haley was crying, I just started praying out loud for all of them to hear me. And I just prayed and told God, we're ready to go. We're all ready to go, and that's okay. If that is your will, we're ready to go. And I didn't know at that time that hope had already died. John Simmons was also the other paramedic that was at the scene of the accident. And John was Jim's accountability partner and prayer partner, and we've been friends with their families for a long time. And of course, John had started at Jim's side and worked his way around and was with each of the kids, and at that point didn't realize that it was us.
I arrived at Joey's side. Joey was not breathing either. I opened up Joey's airway and began to ventilate Joey. It was that point that I realized who they were. I treated Joey until another ALS ambulance arrived and transferred care to that patient, or to that ambulance crew. Once they took over Joey's care, I went back to the white van. At that point, they were extricating Janet from the van. I went up to Janet, and Janet looked at me, and she goes, "Hope he's gone, isn't she?" And I said, "Yes."
Jim, Janet, and their daughter, Haley, suffered many severe injuries. Hannah and Joey were paralyzed from the waist down. Hope Abigail Slate, age 4, perished in the accident. Jim and Janet attended Hope's funeral on stretchers. They watched as their precious daughter's body was buried, and with her, many of their hopes and dreams for their children. Now, they entered a world of losses, medical treatments, and permanent disabilities. On another warm July day, 3 decades prior to the Slate's accident, I too entered that same world of physical disability. I had just graduated from high school and I was preparing for college. My sister and I went to the beach on the Chesapeake Bay, and I swam out to a raft anchored offshore. I took a breath and dove into the water, and in that moment, my life changed. I was paralyzed from the neck down. During recovery, I had a lot of questions about life and about God.
The question that kept plaguing me at first was, why me? Why not somebody else? Why not a neighbor, a friend, someone else across town? And the very question itself raised an image of God throwing dice, or God spinning a roulette wheel. And the idea that God could be that capricious and that offhanded by willy-nilly picking, choosing whomever should might get slept broadsided with this suffering to me was more terrifying than the accident itself.
I remember after the accident, laying in the hospital that day after coming out of surgery, one of the first things I did was just cried out to God. It's like, I cannot physically walk right now. And spiritually, I don't know that I can walk either because I feel so broken and so let down. I mean, your first thought is, God, why? Why did you let this happen?
And it was after the surgery, she came back very weak and tired and truly in despair, I think. And she's like, Lord, I either need to run away from you or I either need to run to you.
You know, that question, why, is so funny. It's so strange. It's so odd. It's never dry or inert or unemotional. It's always why, and aimed at a person, aimed at somebody. Somebody's got to pay. Somebody's got to explain here. Why?
The most difficult whys come when we have done nothing wrong, when we suffer for a mistake or a sin or a crime committed by someone else. Jim and Janet's precious daughter was dead. Two of their young children were paralyzed. Even the man that hit them had pleaded not guilty for what he had done. Why, God? Why? I know what it is like to cry out to God, why? And I know what it's like to hear the silence after my prayer. And as time goes by, the question changes. Instead of asking God why, the question becomes, can I trust God with this?
And so when we ask why, I think all we want God to do is be a daddy, to reach down and pick us up and hold us to his breast and pat us on the back and say, there, there, honey, daddy's here. God is here. Everything's going to be okay. I think that's all we want when we ask why. We just want the fatherly assurance that our life is not spinning out of control. It's not in some nightmarish chaos, that somehow, in some divine way, everything is going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
From the very beginning, my first recollection, I knew that God had a plan for it. I wasn't worried. It's not like me to normally be so optimistic, but God seriously calmed me so much. I mean, I had a peace that passes all understanding.
It was probably about 2 or 3 months after the accident when I saw him for the first time, and I was amazed at the peace that him and Janet both had about the whole thing, not only the injuries that they were dealing with, but the loss of hope and the physical limitations of their children at that point. The peace that he had was overwhelming. And he even shared with me after the fact, when we got back to meeting on a weekly basis, how he would look back at those times and say, John, that wasn't even me. That was God literally carrying me through all that stuff, because he goes, looking back on it, I couldn't have done it without him.
It's one thing to trust that everything's going to be okay in the first few moments type of thing, but as it got further out, that's when I was kind of like, Lord, you really are still there, aren't you? But he proved himself all along the way to Jant and I, almost daily.
The Slates trusted in God's sovereignty, that he was in control over their lives, even in their time of darkness. It gave them a peace and a hope in a hopeless situation. And you know, when we suffer, others do watch. People look closely into the lives of those who suffer. They look to see if what we believe really counts when it hurts.
Their faith was apparent through the entire accident from the very beginning. I remember the news coming to the hospital wanting to interview them, and not once did they ever, I don't even know how to put it into words. They always talked about God being first in their life and how he was in control of the situation. And even though they didn't know what was going on, they trusted God.
The funeral was pretty highly publicized. And Jim and Janet came by way of ambulance, had a number of medical staff attending to them. They were both still in hospital beds. I think our services probably took on a different flavor for quite a while, of just songs and the themes of the services took on the flavor of God is faithful, God is good, he loves us, he extends his mercy to us, probably more than we had for quite a while, just because we are all kind of asking those questions, and I think probably a lot of people weren't asking them out loud. They're asking them deep down inside, and wondering just what do we have to hold on to in this time, and how can we show our faith? How can we live out in the midst of this trial?
When I was first injured, I needed to know that God had his hands on the wheels of my life. I needed to know how and to what extent he was in control of this suffering. It frightened me to death to think he took his hands off the wheel and somehow lost control and was helpless to do anything about my disability. And I was plagued with questions like, if God is powerful and God is good, then why wasn't he powerful enough to stop it? And if he was, and he could have stopped it but didn't, then how in the world can he be good? I think that's the problem that most of us wrestle with. And the answer I found is a little convoluted, but boy, it helped me. And that is, if God didn't control suffering or evil or hardships or catastrophes, then, oh my goodness, evil and catastrophes and suffering would come barreling at us uncontrolled. And I don't know about you, but I cannot live in a world of unrestrained evil. I can't abide a world in which there's no divine hand holding back the flood of maladies and ailments and cancers and diseases and deformities and accidents and illnesses and injuries. Oh God, you must be in control. Please don't take your hands off the wheel for a nanosecond. It takes faith to believe that, but I did. And I think the Slates did, and it has helped enormously.
God started preparing us for the accident before the accident ever even happened. We had went through an incredible Bible study, a discipleship study, a few weeks before the accident. We were only halfway through when the accident happened. But in that study, it was such an awesome growing time for Jim and I. And God and our pastor at the time, Pastor Phil, was like, you know, as we were going through the study, he's like, okay, while you're doing this, I recommend you to read Romans. When you're done reading Romans, read Romans again. And then when you're done, I want you to read it again. So by the time we're done with this, you should have read Romans four times. So we started digging into Romans. And while we were reading Romans and going through the study at the same time, it was just incredible to me, some of the truths. It's like, I had read Romans before. But it's like being in that atmosphere and that study and that frame of worship, I mean, daily worship, the truths that he brought out was just incredible to us. And I see that now. That was God's timing. That was in his timing that we would go through that and develop some of those truths and skills within us that God was trying to show us.
For Jim and Janet, the book of Romans became a treasure. In their time of darkness, here's some of what they found. We also glory in tribulations, knowing that tribulation produces perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope. Yet in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I am persuaded that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God.
So then it brought me back to searching the scriptures and trying to figure out the answers that I had. Where do we go from here? How do we handle this? How do we use this so that God can be glorified in all of this? How do I find that strength and that peace? And it was there, you know, starting from the peace from the moment I saw Hope laying on the ground and knowing she was gone. And that peace that he gave me, to even now, to knowing where hope is, to knowing that my kids' future are in his hands, there's a peace there, there's an intimacy.
It's natural to ask, how can this suffering be God's will in my life? I remember when I asked that question, a friend of mine just answered it with a question back. He said, well, Johnny, let me ask you something. Look at Jesus' life. He went to the cross. Do you think that was God's will? Well, I mean, I didn't know much about the gospel story, but it sounded good to me. Sure, it was God's will that Jesus go to a cross. And I mean, we've been talking about it for the last 2,000 years. I guess it's God's will. But then my friend said, but consider Johnny. It involved torture. It involved murder. It involved mock justice. It involved treason from someone like Judas Iscariot. I mean, how can any of that be God's will? Justice, injustice, murder, torture, treason. But yet, God permits what he hates. He hates all those things. He hates diving accidents. He hates spinal cord injuries. He hates the fact that drunk drivers careen into the front end of cars. He hates these things. But yet, he permits, allows for these things to happen, those things he hates, to accomplish something that he loves. And what is it that he loves? He loves the look on Janet Slate's face, or Jim's, my face, that looks trustingly up to him and says, I believe you. I know that you're after something in my life that goes far deeper than the physical, far deeper than hands that work or feet that walk. It's the changed heart. It's the refined soul that's settled. It's peace that's profound. It is hope buoyant and new. It is a positive perspective on life. It is the ability to share that with others who are hurting. God permits things he hates to accomplish that kind of stuff, because that's the stuff he loves.
For me personally, I never needed God as much as I needed him through the time of the accident, but needing him that deeply took my relationship that deeply, so it's a much deeper relationship, and I'm grateful for that and the lessons that I've learned and just the closeness that I can have with him now. But it was like I had to need him that desperately to have him feel that, to have that comfort and that relationship. So it was through that the relationship was allowed to go more intimate. And I think that's what we learned in this accident. God didn't take the storm away when we called to him, but he provided that shelter and that refuge and that comfort for us to seek while we were going through the storm. Weeks before, I said, God, use our family any way you want. Use us. We are yours. I give you each of my children to do with what you want because they're yours. My job is to raise them to serve you and to know you and to love you. So when he took hope, I couldn't be angry with him because I give him the permission to do that, you know. So there was a peace in letting her go. And just 2 weeks before the accident, Hope had made up a song that she sang, I don't want to go down, I want to go up because I love Jesus. And I just started thinking she's where she wanted to be. That's where she wanted to be. She had such an in-depth love of Jesus for being only 4 years old. And, you know, I think every parent who loses a child, you tend to idealize that child that's gone. But she truly was a very bright, mature little girl for her age. And I think that goes back to God knowing that he wanted us to get as much of her as we could in the 4 years that we had her.
The Bible could be no clearer. God does ask his children of every nation and walk of life to suffer. But they are not asked to walk alone in the suffering, nor are they asked to suffer without a purpose.
You know, one of my favorite verses is 2 Corinthians 1:3-5, and it talks about our comfort comes from Christ. And because of that comfort, I can give comfort to others. I would never have the comfort to give to people had I not been through this valley. I wouldn't have it. I could try to understand. It's like you're in this elite club once you've lost a child or lost somebody you love dearly. You know, you have to pay a high price to be there, and you can only be there through the loss, but there's a bond there. There's an understanding. It goes beyond sympathy, you know, to truly understanding where they're at and understanding those stages of grief. And in an odd way, that is a gift. That is one of the gifts God's given us and good that's come out of it because of the comfort that God showed us, the comfort that we received from our church family, our community, and our friends. We're now able to turn around and give that comfort to those who we come in contact with. And I'm grateful for that.
Today, Jim and Janet Slate, as well as Hannah, Haley, and Joey, serve other families in need through Hope Ministries, named for Hope Abigail Slate. Helping other people endure comes alongside individuals and families who have experienced a devastating accident or a loss in their lives.
You know, Jim and I just started thinking we could use what we've been through to glorify God.
You know, not to be able to say that we've been through this so we know all, but to be able to say we've been through this so we'll walk through it with you, because we can't take it away from anybody, but we can walk through it with them and hopefully along the way be able to say, do you see where God's working? Do you see how God was faithful here? Jim and I have said a lot as far as we'd never want to go through this accident again or have to go through the loss of a child again to learn the things that we've learned. But we're grateful that there have been good things come out of it. And Hannah had shared with me once that she thinks that that's one of the miracles of this, is how God can turn something that was really bad and make good into it, that that is a miracle. And when, you know, I started thinking about it, I'm like, she's absolutely right. Who else could take something so devastating and be able to have anything good come out of it?
Dearest Hopi, in God's time I will understand. You touched my life so much that it hurts so much. Your mommy and I can't wait to see you with Jesus for all eternity. Love, Daddy.
Hopi used to sing this song you made up, I don't want to go down, I want to go up, because I love Jesus, now you are there. I miss you so much, I know I will see you again someday in heaven. I love you, your big sister Hannah.
Hope, you are my best little sister. I wish I could see you. You are in my heart. Do you know that? I love you, your sister Haley.
Hope, you are my best buddy. I miss you so much, and I remember all the times we ate candy together. Love, your brother Joey.
Hopi, you have touched my life in such a dynamic way. I know that is the reason your absence leaves such an incredible pain. My comfort comes from knowing you are with Jesus. I know you are where you most wanted to be. I miss so much your tender touch and strong will. I will hold close my memories of you always in your bathing suit and holding your BB. God has promised me that our separation will not be long, and someday soon we will join you for all eternity in heaven. With all of my love, Mommy.
Whenever I begin to feel, even now, even still, the darkness of confusion or discouragement cloud my vision, I think back on a trip I once took with my mom to Carlsbad Caverns. We went way down into the pit of this cavern, and the guide turned out the light. It was so dark and so frightening. You could not see your hand in front of your face. And yet, in the darkness, I heard my mother's voice, and I found her hand. And never did that hand feel so comforting and securing than when, as a little girl, I found it in the dark. And I believe that suffering is very much like that. God, because He is a mysterious God and His ways are far beyond ours, God knows sometimes often when to let the darkness fall. Through an accident, an illness, a disappointment, a heartache. But when He does, we hear His voice, we reach out, we find His hand, and never, never does the hand of God feel so warm, feel so secure, feel so comforting as when in the dark. And that's the treasure in darkness that can be found.